You've seen those movies where they say, make my day, or I'm your worst nightmare. Well, listen to this one. Rubber baby buggy bumpers. Ha! You didn't know I'm gonna say that, did you?
Your move, creep.
The Matrix is everywhere. It is all around us. Even now, in this very room.
Wait a minute, Doc. Are you telling me that you built a time machine? Out of a DeLorean?
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to an episode of the Film Feast Podcast. I am your host, Matt Bledsoe, and this week we are talking about Shaun of the Dead from 2004. To help me talk about it, I'm joined by some fantastic guests, all guys that you've heard on this podcast many times, and I'm going to go ahead and let them introduce themselves this time. So let's start with...
Andy Gorham, the vanilla gorilla of action Twitter. God, it sounds so dorky saying that about myself.
you gotta own it, Andy.
All right, I'm also 7'9", 380 pounds of pure thank you, Matt, for having me, and thank you for making me be the first one to introduce myself. I appreciate
well
it.
Your name starts with an A. I'm sorry. Okay,
start right at yep, save the
know
best
whose
first.
Name starts with a C.
It's my Chris Barreras. What's up, guys? I'm the angry ginger who only tweets about Star Wars, and for some reason I get shit on Twitter, but Andy doesn't.
To be fair, I don't antagonize at the bottom. When you did that last post, you were like, don't you dare come at me with this stuff. I was like, Andy, don't even, nope, I'm not doing that. You're just inviting them in, man.
That's true.
But
Chris did used to do that. He used to say, don't say something.
I am the ginger
the reverse Sith. Psychology you that's going to make
you're
them
the
say
ginger
it.
Sith.
I am the ginger Sith. I'm very angry.
I just think Chris does it to see how long it will take me to just explode and not go off on somebody in his mentions. And I try not to, because I'm like, nope, he can defend himself. He's seen much more action than I ever have. So I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, but
everything is going as I have foreseen.
Oh, and last but not least, did not introduce himself yet.
No, I didn't. You know, Twitter hero, James Coddington.
Okay, I won't make you guys do it ever again if you don't want to. Sorry.
It just feels weird.
I just want to try it out. I won't make you do that ever again. I'm sorry, everyone.
I do it on my own show, and it always feels so weird to introduce
my least favorite.
That felt very
part of the show. You know what I mean? It's the only part of the show I write anything down for. I don't like doing it, but I feel like you need an intro because, okay, listen, I don't want to, it's not anybody I know. It's not anyone I listen to. I've listened to podcasts where they just jump right in and I do not like it. When they just start talking,
conversation. Yeah, it's literally, yes.
And it's like, no, you can't do that. Like, no theme.
You got to set things up. Come on, guys.
not great. So I feel like you have to do that. I don't like doing it, but you have to do it. But
Matt, you are really, really good at it. So I will say that.
Well, thank you. I feel like a fraud every day. So I'm just some guy.
I try to emulate
movies.
Oh, you and Mike Scott do when I host, because you guys are so easygoing and so chill. Oh, that's the vibe that I go for. And if you listen to my last episode, I fucked that shit up real good.
No, you didn't. You're fine. Stop it.
No. It's fine. That was very nice of you. Thank you. Because I think Mike is very good at the hosting thing. So I don't even think of myself on his level. So I would remember probably Daniel most of the time. So I feel like Daniel was very good at this too. So So anyway, I'm excited. We're finally here after a week delay to talk about Shaun of the Dead. And other things, maybe two. I don't know if anyone wants to like one movie or go around like we usually do, what we've seen lately. So I know we've probably got a lot to talk about. And there's one thing that three of the four of us have seen. I don't know if Chris wants to hear about it anymore.
he'll listen to us talk about it.
Yeah. It's going to be more fun to hear us talk about it. Well, I'll go back around, start with Andy again. What do you want to talk about, Andy? What have you seen lately?
Okay. Well, you kind of set me up. So I think we'll talk about the 2024 Jake Gyllenhaal Roadhouse.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I was getting at.
Yeah, I know. I kind of figured you were. I mean, not many people were talking about it this past weekend on social media or anything. It was a very quiet, you know, movie that dropped. Nobody watched it. No, it was fine. I guess going in, I purposely told myself, don't compare it to the Patrick Swayze one because you're going to be let down. So I didn't want to be let down. And I'm glad I didn't, because I went think going in by like separating that, those in my mind going, this is not going to be that. You don't want it to be that. Don't judge it on that. It was fun. It was entertaining. It was a bit too long. I think if they'd have trimmed 15 minutes off, it would have went down a little bit easier. The action that people are talking about to me didn't look super wacky or crazy. It just, there was a couple parts where I'm like, okay, I think I in my head figured out why it looked a little weird to me. I'll try to do my best to verbalize it quickly, but in most movies, you're not making contact. So you're purposely swinging past the camera or past somebody's face, and then they're reacting. And this four-path method or whatever it was, they would like do a real slow where they'd put their hand up to the person's face so you could see that. Then they'd hit a pad and go back. And when you hit a pad, you kind of recoil back. So that's what you're not used to seeing for like 100 years of filmmaking, is people not hitting each other. So to me, that's what kind of looked weird. And it, you know, it's the start of something new. I think if they keep in the right hands, it could be used for a cool finishing move or something, but you know, they tried something new. I give them credit. And yeah, it was fine.
Yeah. James, what your thoughts on Roadhouse?
Yeah. I mean, from the way Andy's describing it here, I would say similar. I felt like he might've liked it more. I don't know.
I think so a little bit, but yeah. I think I've actually tempered on it since I first posted my initial review. It's like, yeah, I mean, I liked it, but it's like, I haven't felt the need to go back and rewatch it immediately or anything else like that. Whereas some movies like John Wick 4 makes you do that immediately. You want to watch it again. So I think I've kind of come down on it a bit, but it's still, I think
that's
out of all
funny,
of us,
I
liked it the most.
I thought I was too hard on it. I think I've come up on a little bit. Like slightly, because I think I was being too hard on it. I still don't like it that much. Yeah. I think it's okay. I think it's okay, but it's like one of the, I was trying to do what you were doing, Andy. It was like, I'm not going to try to compare this to the original Roadhouse, because that's a very like unique of its time thing. It can't replicate that. You know, and they can't, but like halfway through, I think it started off pretty strong, like with where it sets things up. And there's like a really, I like the sequence when Jake Gyllenhaal first gets to the roadhouse and beats up the guys and then drives them to the hospital while I think the song Kokomo plays. So there's like some like song and he drives them all in the little car after he beat them up. I was like, this is going pretty well. And then I feel like it just really sags in the middle. And then I started thinking like, why does this even need to exist? Why do we make this movie? The last fight with Jake Gyllenhaal and Conor McGregor is pretty fun. Although the whole fight, I mean, there's people know way more than I do about this. And like, apparently the technique's been used before. Like, I think the example I saw was Raging Fire, which was the Donnie Yen movie from a few years ago. And I think maybe the way Doug Liman shoots it is just weird. I don't know. It's like I feel like Jake Gyllenhaal and McGregor put in the work, but it's like the way that it got shot was just strange to me and off. I don't know. Conor McGregor, that was the other topic of
that conversation. that human trash bag of a person. Yeah, he's there, but
I don't know what to make of his performance. Someone pointed out it's like somebody who's like in Tommy Wiseau's The Room, where it's like it's so bad you can't look away, which is kind of how I felt about it, because I recognized it was bad, but I was like captivated by the badness. Like it's pretty ridiculous. And of course he seems well equipped with the physical stuff, but that's about it. Otherwise he just walks around like a crazy person.
Pool cue so far up his ass he can't walk normal. It's like he's got that
like a
stupid
weird
strut,
old-timey cartoon character. Like I can't like the arms are all up and like the leg, you know, just very strange. I don't know, it's like
Conor McGregor's pre-fight kind of shtick when he's like trying to sell a fight and he's like amping everything up. It's that times like a million in this, and it's so ridiculous. So he's just like, what is happening here? He looks like just somebody put a tube up to him and just inflated him. Like, he doesn't look like a normal human being anymore. Like, I guess, you know, cocaine and roids will do that to you, I guess. I don't know.
I know. Yeah. I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know. But
I was going to say about the fights too. Yeah. It's like, I mean, I too saw, you know, like people talking about the techniques they were using and, you know, explaining some of the reason why it might look the way it looked for certain things. But obviously there were other times where it still looked that way, even though that wasn't necessarily the reason it looked that way. Right. Like the first fight, even with like Post Malone and stuff, you know, they just had a little funky feeling. And so it was like, kind of like certain parts looked okay. And I was okay with it doing those techniques, but then other parts still felt a little funky to me personally. Right. So like, it was kind of like just both, you know, there were times where I didn't mind that as much, but then other times where, like, you know, one of the two bartending or the other bouncers that, you know, work at the club, or I guess the only bouncers, because is Jake Gyllenhaal even, you know, a bouncer? I don't know. when there's some of theirs, like whenever they do theirs, and like it's just some of the, like you're saying, it was maybe it's just the way Doug Liman's like decided to shoot it. It feels a little funky, you know, like where it's cutting and where it's going and where you see everything start and end is not always. Doesn't always feel right necessarily, but there were some that were cool. Like you said, the first one I was really fun. Slap, kind of like the slap fight, I guess, basically what it is. And then like the last fight is kind of fun, although the last fight I do think maybe they just did too much of that technique, you know,
like I think so, yeah,
bring it back little. But I also like, I mean, Jake Gyllenhaal's great in it, I think, so like,
yeah,
it's worth a watch just for
okay.
him.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, he's good. And like his switch in the last half where he basically becomes like the Hulk, you know, he's like, he's being like so cool and like so nice and trying to like, you know, temper all his issues for the whole first two acts, you know, taking the guys to the hospital. He's like doing the opposite of, you know, everything that you would think. But then like the end, it comes out, you know, and he's like the angry guy.
Yeah. I will say the one thing that I thought was a big difference between the first one, there's a lot of differences, but between Jake Gyllenhaal and Swayze is like, when Swayze's trying to be nice, I feel like I believe him more, like that he doesn't want to like actually do anything bad. And they talk about stuff, they set him up for like, oh, he ripped a guy's throat out. And you're like, when you see that later in the movie, you're like, holy shit, he did. Like, it's almost like you buy the nice quality of Swayze and his Dalton. I always feel like Gyllenhaal's Dalton's like on the edge to kill somebody. Like, that does not surprise me when he like really goes off, because I feel like he's a guy that has a lot of anger. Patrick Swayze does not feel like he has that much anger, and then he kind of blows up at the end. You're like, whoa, shit, like, okay, he really had some stuff buried deep. But I don't know, Jake Gyllenhaal's thing just feels like he's just edge.
I think he's trying to,
but that's
how it's set up. Is he did obviously have some issues. Like, I don't think they're trying to play it like he is a nice guy overall. I think he was the bad guy overall. And then he was being the nice guy to try to get away from that because of what ended up, you know, I don't want to spoil stuff, but what happened.
Right. You know, this is like, why I shouldn't compare the original to this one, but it's like, it's, you know,
The only other thing I would add really quickly, because we do got to move on so Chris can join in the conversation, because he was one of the few smart ones who didn't actually waste his time watching this and getting involved in the conversation.
I watched Star Wars all weekend. I was good, man.
Hell yeah. Hey, so did I, man. But one thing I would say is, if this almost, and I know I'm going to get a lot of flack for this, but it almost could have been a quote unquote prequel of sorts, because when we see Dalton in the Swayze version, he's like the ultimate Dalton. He like knows his job, he knows how to deal with it. This is almost like he just gets plucked out of nowhere because somebody saw him slap somebody and they're like, you should be a cool, come on over here.
It's like,
so it's almost like this movie could have ended where Dalton becomes that guy.
That's true.
And then moves forward. I'm glad they didn't do that, number one, and it's just so weird and different. But and one more final thing, I really liked some of the supporting cast members, like the actress that played the young girl whose dad owns the bookstore. I thought she was great. I thought her and Gyllenhaal played well off of each other. You could tell he kind of liked those scenes because he didn't have to like be that Dalton. He could just be Jake Gyllenhaal in those scenes, if that makes sense. So I liked her and the dad and, you know, stuff like that. So, and I bought that relationship, so when they do something happens to them, like, you can see why he would flip that switch and start to get pissed. So they at least tried, but you know, watch the one with Patrick Swayze and you'll be fine,
and it
you'll
did
be much
me,
much happier.
It did make me realize, I was like, wow, how have we not done a Roadhouse episode of this podcast yet. Mm-hmm. Like, I got to do Episode of Roadhouse. So it was, yeah. They really flipped that switch. I was like, I got to do that now.
Well, it's also funny. I know I've seen some people say, you know, like, well, did it even have to be called? Because you were saying they could have done a prequel. You're glad they didn't. Some people say, like, did it even need to be called Roadhouse? It could have been its own thing and just had similar, you know, because, like, obviously you can do, there's other movies that are like other movies. You don't have to be Roadhouse, you know, because there's enough differences in it, right, that people would be like, oh, that's just like Roadhouse. And instead of putting the name Roadhouse on it, and then you bring that extra heat, right? Like, it's like,
yeah, but I also think from like a studio perspective, like, it has that name recognition,
right? You know, oh, yeah,
like,
sure.
Like, IP is such a big thing nowadays, mm-hmm. where it's like, and Roadhouse as an IP, could be this. And it's like, it was never, planned as that. You know what I mean? So it's, I don't know. It's a weird situation.
It was a one and done. And it was, And
I mean, that automatically gets extra eyes on it. Like you said, you know, like, it's, Roadhouse. Okay. Automatic. But also, I mean, I just wish that, you know, because, like, I feel like they should trust Jake Gyllenhaal to bring in that eye alone, but I guess not. Yeah, I don't know. Right. Is he not big enough? Like,
he is.
I don't really know if I have my finger on the pulse of that. Like,
I think we clearly don't.
Is he not a star? Like, I feel
His last big box office, like, hit, Jake Gyllenhaal?
Prince of Persia. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I mean, I guess not. See, and I don't mean like movie star like Tom Cruise. That's not what I'm saying. But like, I feel like he's a
draw, star, right? You know? He's a name,
especially for an Amazon Prime original exclusive. Like, if that was the plan the whole time, like, I don't know. It
apparently it got a lot of watches over the weekend. So they like I saw something where they like said how much money it made. I was like, how do you know that? It's streaming. Like,
how do you quantify
from new people buying it? Like, or
because Amazon has ads now. Remember, unless you pay the extra, like $3-4 or
the
whatever.
Extra $3 a month.
It's only right at the. I'm not trying to like defend Amazon or anything.
Oh yeah,
don't you dare!
Oh boy.
Well, because they popped up when I watched it. I was I forgot. But it was only two ads right at the beginning, and then
I was going to say I didn't want to defend Amazon either, but I was surprised. Because I was like, shit, the ads. But
I thought they were going to pop up the whole time.
Jeff Bezos, dude, is going to send you a check in the mail, guys. Don't worry.
Yeah. Check in the mail. I thought it was going to be like Tubi. That's all. Outside to take James and Matt to dinner.
Were they only, it's weird. I thought they'd be more. I think they're only in the beginning of whatever you're going to watch. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But not to defend them. I was like,
I didn't mean to make it sound like
I'm glad I didn't pay $2 or $3 extra to get rid of.
I think I did because I got some sort of like, notification on my Amazon Prime thing that a price was changing, and I just like every year it comes in, so I was like, all right, get it. And then I think I think I'm giving them $3 extra a month, so I don't have commercials. Damn it, I think
cancel that. I was gonna say the only last thing I'll say about Roadhouse, I swear we can be done, is like talking about comparing remakes. That's something I feel like
Roadhouse,
sure, you're gonna do it, but I don't think that should ever get so many people. Who cares? You can compare it to the original. True. Why do you have to rely so much on that comparison when you're making your own judgment of the new movie? Just compare them and say like, oh, this one does this. Okay, that's fine. But then still also judge them on their own. Like, you can judge them both ways.
There you go.
I feel like.
Perfectly said.
Good job. Not. Nice to put the button on that. Okay, I'm going to let Chris talk about what he watched because I feel bad he set that out pretty much.
No, don't worry about it.
He did it to himself.
Yeah, because I took a break from my slow watch of all the Planet of the Apes movies, and I went out to the theater and saw the latest installment. I saw and Frozen Empire. I'm not sure if any of you guys saw it.
I think now I'm the only one who didn't see it.
Oh, okay. You got to this one out, James.
I've been a lifelong fan of Ghostbusters since I was a kid. I've liked every single entry, with the exception of 2016. But that wasn't on the cast. I think it was the tone that they chose. But I think that is a discussion for another episode. But heading into Frozen Empire, I loved Afterlife. It hit me like right in that right spot in nostalgia and feels and just all the emotion that it had. That movie like really really hit me in a special way. And leading up to Frozen Empire, I was really excited because everyone involved kept saying it has the vibe of the old animated show. And I was like, I'm in. And then seeing all the trailers, I was like, it looks like it has that vibe, but there's a lot of characters. And after I left the movie, I don't like it as much as Afterlife. I don't think it has the same an emotional connection, but it is way more fun. And it is an episode of the cartoon in live action. I got a few issues with it. I think it is way too overstuffed with characters. There's a lot of fucking characters in this movie, and some honestly are kind of interchangeable. I like what they did with the old cast, though. In particular, Aykroyd, I think how he plays in with the new cast is extremely well done. And then the other three are just kind of in there sporadically, and it works. I like where it leaves it, and it leaves it open for another one to go even larger. I'm hoping that they trim the cast back a little bit for the next one. And I'm wondering when it comes out in home release, if they're going to have all the scenes that were taken out, because there's scenes in the trailer that aren't in this movie, like at all. And then I've heard that there were a lot of reshoots, and then right before the movie was listed that they trimmed out over 20 minutes of the runtime. So it was supposed to be a lot longer movie.
Oh, wow.
I don't know what happened, where they're just like, oh, hack out 20 minutes. And I think that ties into another issue that I have with it, which is, the last act fucking, it starts and it's over like a wham, bam. But still so much fun though. I just had like a smile on my face, like the whole time. And I couldn't have asked for anything else. I kind of knew heading in that it wouldn't be like as emotionally heavy as Afterlife, and it worked. So yeah, I liked it.
Andy, your thoughts?
Yeah, I echo everything Chris said. I haven't been as lifelong a fan, honestly, the last couple of years, talking with Chris Moore and now Mark, our other Scum co-host. They're both super huge fans, and their fandom has like brought me back up. Like, I've always liked them and I've always watched them multiple times, but it's not like one that I would have said when like Afterlife came out, I was, oh, cool, I'll eventually see that. Well, this one, I was like, oh, sweet, Frozen Empire, I'm definitely going to see that, because, you know, their love helped me. But it was super fun. It was felt like an episode of the real Ghostbusters cartoon. I agree with Chris. There's a lot of characters in it. Could have been trimmed down a little bit too. Character wise, and there's certain scenes that just feel like they're oddly cut. And I'm like, there was something else that was there, but we'll probably see it when it comes out on, you know, Blu-ray or 4K or whatnot. So, but yeah, it was fun. I laughed a lot. And one thing that shocked the hell out of me is Ernie Hudson is 78 years old. And if you've seen pictures of him even recently, he looks phenomenal. Like, I mean, I want to look that good at 44 right now. He looks great. So, and he's kind of, while Aykroyd's was really good and like featured more prominently, I thought it's nice to see his Ray kind of get his chance to shine too, because, you know, in the old one, he's kind of brought in halfway through and you're like, oh yeah, it's Ray. But no, sorry, not Ray. Winston, excuse me. But it's nice to see him kind of get that and be more of a like prominent figure in the Ghostbusting universe, so to speak. So,
yeah. I guess I kind of
live with that shame, Andy. You said Ray instead of Winston.
I know. You know.
Make a T-shirt.
I'll go change my Twitter bio.
But at least you said that you weren't lifelong diehard Ghostbuster fan at the beginning, so you know, let us slide.
Oh,
I'm a lover, not an expert, put exactly. it that way.
I kind of feel the same way you guys did. It's one of those movies where I'm not a critic, but if I was being more critical, I feel like I'd have a lot of I recognize the issues, but they didn't bother me that much, I guess. Like, I liked it. I think I like Afterlife a little bit more just because it
Oh yeah.
I don't know. Kind of had more of like an emotional center to it. And I think it's kind of like it felt a little bigger. This one, it's the opening is great to this one. I think it has a great opening sequence with the chase, like through the car and everything.
Oh yeah, that's great.
The one and all that. That's really fun. The ending felt weirdly very contained and kind of small for what they built up, like for this big bad. And it's kind of like, like it definitely feels like things were cut around. Mm-hmm. I feel like the old Ghostbusters and the new Ghostbusters feel weirdly separated. But besides like Dan Aykroyd's kind of with them through most of it and Winston pops in. But yeah, literally Bill Murray like waltzes in, you know, kind of just like, I'm here. And I was like, how long were you on the set, Bill Murray?
Days, I bet. Yeah.
I bet it was 2 days. They're literally like separated at the end, I think, the sets of Ghostbusters. So it's like this weird thing where you have to cut the cord to the old Ghostbuster at some point if you want to go forward with the franchise. And they're not, I guess, there yet. I don't know. But it definitely does feel like an episode of real Ghostbusters. I watched Ghostbusters 2 today, actually, because I was still in a Ghostbusters mood. And I forgot how much that feels like the real Ghostbusters, because that was actively airing at the time. I want more like crazy ghost designs and effects and like show me more of that. And there's so many characters in this movie that people get lost in the shuffle. I bet Finn Wolfhard was probably upset. Maybe, I don't know. I mean, he was like, he's so like sidetracked. Not like I miss Finn Wolfhard that much, but I'm just saying like he was a person that was prominent in the first movie. And I feel like he's pushed out in this movie.
Just hang out with Slimer.
That's true. He does get the Slimer. He gets the Slimer stuff. I don't know. I mean, I still love seeing the old Ghostbusters come back. I do like this universe. I think they need to get a little like bigger and crazier with it, I guess. I don't know. Like, saying that 20 minutes or so got cut out definitely makes sense, because I felt like it felt a little disjointed. And yeah, there was just so much going on. There was so much going on. So, you know what? I had a good time. I can't be that critical of it for the issues I had with it. I was like, whatever. It's Ghostbusters. I had fun. So, and we'll see if they make another one, but I don't know. I would like to see another one with the younger cast, whatever. Like, we'll see. Mm-hmm. It was number one. It didn't make a ton of money. It made like the same as Afterlife, but you know, I don't know. I don't think it costs that much to make. So it should be all right. Yeah. But James, I think you would like it if you get around to seeing it.
Yeah. I think I was telling y'all that I didn't ever actually, that was one that went on the back burner, Afterlife, and I haven't seen.
Oh, that's right. We shamed you for not seeing Afterlife.
Yeah, well, and I pulled it up. I don't want to buy it, you know. And I guess I could rent it, but I was like, it's not streaming anywhere on any of my streaming services. You know, and it's like, dang. I mean, I'm kind of surprised, honestly.
That's why you need physical media, James.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. I mean, yes, okay, Andy, or you know, I'm not like. I don't want to buy it. I don't know I'm going to ever watch it again, or how much I'm going to like it or love it.
Yep.
I'll get around to it. And then when I do, I'll definitely see Frozen Empire. Also, I was going to say, Chris, you know, about was it 2016?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Ghostbusters. I didn't love it either, but I think I tried to like, I don't know, like, you know, I felt like instead of like, it being like a sequel, I was kind of trying to like, maybe if it wasn't a Ghostbusters movie again, it's like one of those things where, you know, if it wasn't Ghostbusters, because they're trying to do their own like that style of comedy in that, right? And it's different than Ghostbusters comedy, you know, like it's their comedy. They're making it their own. And so it feels a little weird, and it's almost like a reimagining, right, of Ghostbusters more than a actual sequel or even a remake, quote unquote, you know. It's like, so I tried really hard. I enjoy it. I think it's fun, but yeah, like it's not. It's obviously not as. I mean, come
on. Yeah.
I just and when I finally watched it, I was like, this is like the most okay movie I've ever seen. Yeah, there's no totally reason to be that riled up about this movie. Like,
it doesn't deserve that much.
Bustin' Ghosts,
right? I think
Ghostbusters.
I think again, if it wasn't for the name, it would just be a comedy out of that crew of people, and it fits in their style of comedy. It what's the a director's name? And Paul Feig. It is his style of comedy through and through, that either it works for you or not. I've liked a few of his movies. I haven't liked a few of his movies. Oh, this is like right smack in the middle. I think it was fine, but again, the name brought all this unnecessary heat on. I don't even have an issue with the fact that all of them were women, because if you look at that cast,
well, I certainly hope not.
Top tier comedy talent. You know what I mean? Like, Kate McKinnon in that movie is fucking hysterical.
Oh, like, yeah, I remember her being
everything
really
she does, I laughed at. So, I mean,
right. She's so weird.
I mean, Hemsworth is in it, hamming it up. So, there's not, I mean, on paper, there's a lot to like about it. And I think it just, Hemsworthing it up.
But, I've seen this.
But I just think, because, yeah, I think the Ghostbusters name brings a lot of, you know, feeling. I mean, there's people that I have friends that literally make their own proton packs and they travel around the country going to Ghostbuster, conventions and stuff like that. It's really cool and I'm happy for them. But they liked the movie, but they weren't like over the moon about it. So, yeah, I think like the previous movie we talked about, you have that kind of that name
attachment
recognition. It Bustin' Ghost.
Even what me and Matt were talking about yesterday, Star Wars, right? Rise of Skywalker. Yeah. Like, you know, we know what we want from Star Wars, right? And if you don't get it, certain people are going to be real upset if they don't get what they want. You know?
Even eight years later, they're still upset.
Right. And all, yes, obviously Star Wars is even bigger than Ghostbusters, right? So it's even got more, you know, of an attachment from a lot of people, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's a mystery. I don't know. We don't all think that negatively about these franchises. It's hard to think the comments I read. I'm like, where do you find the energy to get this upset about?
Right.
This kind of stuff.
I don't even get that upset about the things that I love. It seems so weird.
So easygoing, or I'm just going to focus on what I like about it and not dwell on the negative stuff, if there is any.
Just be chill, man.
Yeah, chill out, guys.
All right, well,
buddy.
I guess I'll just keep going. You all got one, James. You got anything you want to talk about?
Oh, I forgot. Yeah, we were still.
Sorry, pick something only three of the four of us have seen.
We talked about stuff. I went and saw Luca, me and my little one, because we went and saw all the Pixar re-releases in the theater. And that was the last, I think that's the last one they're doing that got released during the pandemic or whatever. And great. I mean, loved watching them all on the big screen.
I feel like you mentioned before with one of these, have these not been well attended, the ones you've gone to? I feel like I'm not hearing anything about them. I think you're the only person I've heard mention they're even happening.
Yeah, there was like 10 people at most in each one.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, not very, which sucks. I mean, I don't know. I mean, but yeah, like you said, they're also not marketing them.
They're not marketing them. And
I only know because I know, but
They're like, well, things are expensive and I have Disney Plus at home probably.
Yeah.
But,
well, that too. Right. They've watched them 1,000 times. They can watch them at home with their kid. She likes going to the movies and I like going to the movies.
So I love going to the movies. So yeah.
I don't get to go as often because of her. So it's like, you know, I'm going to take her with me to go see something she wants to see. So, you know.
Yep.
And win.
You saw all three of those, right?
It was Soul first. Yeah, they did Soul first, then they did Turning Red, and then they did Luca. They did them like a month apart, so it was like January, February, now March.
What was the favorite of hers of those three, dude? Curious.
Turning Red.
Right on. Same for me, actually.
Yeah, I mean, she likes them all, but yeah, Turning Red is, and it was her favorite even whenever it came on originally, you know, like, so.
Mm-hmm.
She kind of sticks with that one.
When I watched, we talked about this before, I think, but when I watched Soul, I was like, I don't think kids would not. They
Soul's
get
a little
this.
More. That's what I told you, man. It was making heavy me for... like, I was like, oh man.
Yeah. Like super emotional and stuff. And I'm just like, ugh.
Yeah.
About death. And much. I was like, these kids don't think about this. But it's like,
at least I hope they don't.
And Luca too.
Like, I hope they don't. Yeah. Yeah. They shouldn't be. They
and they all are too. Like even Luca gets me at the end. I'm like, it's pulling on those.
Honestly, everything gets me nowadays as I get older. My wife's looking over at me. She goes, oh, my God. I was like, oh, I'm sorry. You don't have a soul.
The only thing I was going to say about Luca is I when I was watching it this time, I kept thinking about Equalizer 3. I don't know if you saw it. So you should do a double feature because they're in that same kind of town, you know. So I was like, hey, this is kind of like the town, the beautiful town he goes to in this.
If only
he slaughters people.
Yes. Yeah.
So many steps.
That's going on in the background of Luca. You just didn't.
Yeah, exactly.
Animated
way
in the
back. Denzel running around in the background. Yeah.
Okay. Complete 180 from Luca. I saw Immaculate. Is a new sorry, what do you think I was gonna say, Andy? I'm sorry.
I thought you were gonna talk about what you watched earlier today.
Oh, Dragons Forever.
Yeah
last night. Yeah Oh, really quick, I watched Dragons Forever with the three brothers, I believe they're called, Jackie Chan, Sammo Hung, Yuen Biao. I can never know.
Yuen Biao.
Thank you. It's like I'm gonna mess this up, but it was great. It was really fun. Hong Kong comedy does not play well for me, but like usually Jackie Chan and Sammo Hung do comedy pretty well. And this, I thought a lot of the comedy in this worked really well. Like, and I'm blanking right now. Somebody commented, I think it was Matthew Esseri. I can't remember. Yep. He was like, the comedy translates well. And I agree. I think the comedy translates really well. And there's great action. The third act is so much fun. So many great
amazing stuff,
different fights going on in that location. I don't know what else to say. It's just a really, with the amount of talent involved, and Corey Yuen co-directing, Jess directing, I'm not sure, like, just like I saw conflicting things with him and Sammo Hung co-directing or whatever.
He directed certain elements, and then like Sammo directed, but then like the action scenes at the end are split between Sammo doing his thing and Jackie and his group doing their thing, and it's all just a big, big, glorious kung fu mayhem. So it's great.
A kung fu mishmash. Yeah, I mean, it's great. It's I really liked it. So can't recommend that one enough. I'm glad. I mean, I blind bought that because MVD and this other site called like Oldies or something were like giving
sales
away.
Sales going on are nuts.
They were like, this was a 4K of Dragon's Forever, I think it was $13. And it's like a super nice like package with a booklet and a poster and like a, it's not even, it's, and like all the Blu-rays were like $10, and they were just like giving away all these like Arrow and all these other things like for so cheap. So I got a bunch of stuff. So cool. Yeah, Dragon's Forever was super cool. Really like that. Immaculate.
Okay,
that's okay. No.
Hijacking your movies there.
Matt, how dare you?
I'm sorry. Immaculate with Sydney Sweeney. It's a new horror movie that just came out, which was pretty bananas. I really really liked it. It's basically, she's like this young nun that goes to Italy because her convent shuts down, and
I'm in.
Sydney Sweeney's a nun for everyone out there who's into that. That's
I'm gonna be creepy. I'm in.
She, and there's creepy stuff going on at this convent. Very quickly, it's under 90 minutes, always a plus for me.
Oh wow,
gets right nice. Down to business. I thought it was actually pretty creepy and scary at times. Like, there are some jump scares. I know people complain about jump scares, but I thought they were like effective jump scares, and I thought the atmosphere when it's creepy is pretty creepy. I realized I really haven't seen Sydney Sweeney much for how much she's been just around the past like 6 months to a year. She's like everywhere.
Yeah, she's exploded. Yeah,
but I don't know much about her acting, but like I thought she was really good in this. Like, I'm sold on her in this, and this is not easy. There's a scene, I don't want to spoil too much, but there's a scene, I'll say near the end, where she just has to like scream, like, and it's like the most blood-curdling scream that I've heard from like anybody a long time. It's like, if she does more horror, she's in good standing, because like truly like scream queen type thing. Really intense scene. And yeah, I mean, I don't want to say more about the plot, people will know, or I'll keep it a surprise what happens to her, but like bad shit starts to happen. And it gets pretty nuts. I kind of wish it got a little crazier in the third act, like it's setting up like it's gonna go like real crazy. It gets pretty crazy, but it doesn't quite get as nuts as I would like. And I mean, it's still a lot of fun. It definitely has like a lot of Italian horror influence, I think. But yeah, it was really good.
Is it so gory at all?
It's pretty gory at times. Okay. Like, and just like some of the stuff that gets under my skin, like, I don't know about you guys. There's somebody peels a fingernail off.
Nope, nope.
Yeah. Could watch somebody get beheaded, and to watch someone pull a fingernail off, I was like,
I can watch The Night Comes for Us over and over again, but you start pulling off fingernails, I'm like, that's too much. Oh my gosh, no, that hurts to me just looking at it.
I was telling a friend of mine, I was so not like mad, but I went to the theater. I go to where they serve like food, like the full meals, and they usually get them out pretty quick. They took like way longer than usual this time, and I said, God damn it, this thing's gonna show up right when stuff starts getting gross. And it did, like, my food, it's going pretty well for the first 45 minutes. And then, like, literally my food gets on my thing in front of me, my tray in front of me. And then it's, like, there's just blood and fingernails being pulled off and just a lot of gross
shit. It's the 4D experience, Matt. Like, I mean, you get what you pay for, bro.
It's like, please get the food out here before.
What'd you get to eat? That's what I want to know now. What'd you get to eat?
Listen, just spaghetti, chicken tenders, and French fries. But
okay, always a solid, always a solid.
There's a
bet
scene where she
out.
Literally cuts a chicken's head off.
God! As you're eating your chicken tender, like,
I'm eating my stomach. Sorry, chicken. It's like, it's good. This place has the best chicken tenders in the world, by the way. I don't know if it's not a high bar, but. Cinema Cafe in Hampton Roads area. Best chicken tenders. But yeah,
you're here, people.
Yeah, if you're in the local area. But yeah, it got gross. Running out of my food, which is funny. I was like, damn it. But no, still really good horror movie. I don't hate horror, contrary to what's been said on Twitter. I think Lindsay asked the question on the last episode about, like, Matt, why do you hate horror? I was like, I tweeted about that, like, 2 years ago that I didn't like. I was like, I don't think I like horror anymore, and it's been haunted me ever since, much like the Jaws 4.5 comment. So
now, speaking of which, what do you rate this one?
Just three and a half, so a whole star down from Jaws. So
that tracks.
All right, yeah, so all right, well, now we can talk about Shaun of the Dead.
Woo!
A movie I cannot believe.
Yeah, boy.
Movie I cannot believe is turning 20 years old this year.
Oh man. Jesus. Why would you do that?
I'm sorry. I didn't even think about it until we were about to start recording. And I was like, oh God, this is like a 20th anniversary episode. It came out in September. I guess in the United States. I don't know about anywhere else. But I was like, oh God, 20 years of Shaun of the Dead. Like, what happened?
Wait, what? Yeah. Wait. When did you say it came out?
2004. I mean, I'm not sure when it came out, if it came out earlier in England.
Oh, okay. I thought you said...
No, no. What do you think I said?
I don't know. Because it was weird because I was looking at the date of when Dawn of the Dead came out, which was in March, right? And then it was the same year, you know, or sorry, Snyder's Dawn of the Dead.
The remake,
you know, the 2004 version of Dawn of the Dead. And I guess they like released it in the UK like 2 weeks later. They held off on releasing it, but then it didn't get released here for like months. It's kind of weird.
Well, here's the crazy
usually
thing.
Usually it's the other way, you know, but I guess
IMDb, the movie had its premiere in, oh God, my voice cracked. It had its premiere in London. I'm back in 2004. Oh, it had its premiere in 2004. Oh my, in London.
Oh, that's great.
March 29th. We're recording this March 25th. So we weirdly are close to the actual 20 year anniversary.
Price is Right rules. We did not go over, so we win.
Yeah, there you go. So who wants to start talking about Shaun of the Dead? Clearly I need more water. My voice is breaking over.
Where do you begin?
I always go first, so you can let somebody else go first.
Okay. I'll go. I remember seeing trailers for this, not like it was attached to some other movie that I had watched. And I was like, what is this? Because it's a comedy, but it kind of has a romance angle to it. I didn't recognize any of the leads. I was like, what is this movie? And it came out and I remember I rented it. Not on Blu-ray, on DVD at the time. And I forgot who I watched it with or whatever, you know, but I watched it and I was like, this is hysterical. I fell in love instantly, looked up Edgar Wright and realized that he had made a TV show first that ran for two seasons called Space. I tracked down Space. I spent way too much money on the DVD set for it. And I've been a fan of Edgar Wright ever since. I think Shaun of the Dead is... I fluctuate. Of the three movies of the trilogy, ask me today and I'll say that it is Shaun of the Dead. If you ask me in a week, I will say it is Hot Fuzz. If you ask me a week after that, At World's End. Like, just this little trilogy of movies starting at Shaun of the Dead, I think, is just pure magic, man. It's so quotable too, but it's also very, very sweet. And it's just, it's weird how he's able to take these other genres and throw them all together and it works. A similar to what we said on our other episode that we did, on Scott Pilgrim, is he takes all these elements that on paper sound so oil and water, and he throws them together and it just works. It helps that the cast is just absolutely fantastic and it's paced extremely well. I love this fucking movie so much, man. I was watching it for this episode, just going like, oh God, I forgot how good this fucking movie is.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, anyone else? Said. That was good. That was a good start. Oh, yeah. Andy, James, you want to jump in?
Tough to follow. Yeah, I
we're ending the episode. That was too good. It's open.
I feel like I came to it later. I don't have a strong memory of seeing trailers for it even really or anything. Because I think I just remembered I was Dawn of the Dead. I was a big Dawn of the Dead head. Dawn of the Dead head. I love Snyder's Dawn of the Dead when it came out. I was like,
oh yeah, yeah.
I was digging it. I was on board from day one.
Same.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't remember when I came to Shaun of the Dead. Probably, you know, friends watching it randomly. You know, like once it started to get a little bit of buzz. You know, like. But yeah, I mean, basically, once I did finally watch it, you know, I fell in love with it immediately. I've loved it ever since. Like, kind of like Chris said, I think we even talked about this already. Like, you know, it's tough to choose, you know, your favorite Edgar Wright movie or like of the trilogy, especially like it's whichever one you're watching, man. That's like the best one at the moment, because when you're in the moment, you're in the moment and you're just like, it feels good. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like this is also one of the best. There's got to be like, this has got to be in the top like five of like parody / satire, so, you know, like whatever of like its genre, because like it does it so good, but it also is like already also so good at doing what it's doing in like its own thing too, you know, like. Mm-hmm. But then when you add in all that other, you know, the zombie thing, like the Dawn of the Dead stuff, like it's because I mean it's all, you know, close to a perfect experience, you know, like movie,
like a 4.5 out of five.
Basically 4.5.
I'm leaving. 4.5. I'm leaving.
Oh
yeah, no, I dig it a lot.
Oh man,
everyone's great. Yeah. I mean, it's weird to like how there's like no bad. Like everyone has their own sense of humor in the movie. Like they all have their own style, and they're all like the best at it. You know, it's so weird that there's so many people doing so good. You know, like so it's kind of crazy that they got them all together for this.
Yeah, and some people, like, before they were as big as right. they were, Martin Freeman's in, like, one shot, right? Like, right. The other crew, and I'm like, oh, look at that. And also,
of the other crew, the mom character at the back is from Spaced. Is they brought a lot of people in from Spaced.
That's what I'd heard. They brought a lot of people from Spaced on there. Has anybody seen Spaced besides Chris?
I have.
Has everyone but me seen Spaced?
It is a show.
Oh, I thought you were signaling you had seen it, James.
My bad. No, I have not.
In fact, there's a character out of space in this movie, but he doesn't have any lines.
Yep.
When I saw how short Spaced was, I was like, I could watch this and make Chris happy. I watch a TV show.
So So there's a character in space who is a messenger on a bike. Mm-hmm. And in the scene when Sean is on top of the trash can, you're going like, oh, you're like over here. If you hit pause, oh, that actor is in costume in zombie makeup in that shot. So it's implied that it's the same world as space.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, Andy, sorry. You want to go ahead?
Sure. Yeah. I remember seeing trailers for it, but I also remember like none of my friends wanting to go see it. So it was one of those, you know, now I will go to a movie all by myself. Like I love going to movies by myself. It's wonderful. But back then it was like, I want to make sure I got somebody to go with and this and that. So, and then I rented it on a whim, just kind of like Chris did and probably like James did and stuff like that. So, the humor hits, the romance hits, how quotable it can be. Like I just mentioned, like, wee and stuff like that. And there's certain times when like a certain song comes on, like a certain Queen song, I immediately start bobbing my head, like the characters in the movie start doing. So it's instantly memorable. And it sets up that Edgar Wright visual flair that we talked about with, you know, Scott Pilgrim, how when he shows up, you know, they have a certain way of how he kind of smash cuts real quick scenes to show they arrive at the bar and they're pouring the beer and all that stuff, you know, or sorry, ale, as they would probably call it. But it's fun. It's heartfelt. You got some certain characters that you got Bill, you know, Nighy, who shows up and adds some like gravitas to it, because I love when he's like, no, Sean. The way he says Sean's name is so hilarious. Just like
it also leads to one of my favorite jokes in the entire movie is when Sean tells his mom that he chased me around the yard with a piece of wood, and she goes, oh, well, you did call him you know what? And he goes, oh, he told you, didn't he? She goes, yeah. She goes, motherfucker. I say that line all the motherfucker all the time because of Shaun of the Dead.
I thought you were gonna, because my favorite joke in the whole thing, it makes me die every time I see it, is when they show up at his mother's house and his character has already admitted to being bitten. And he's like, mom, we gotta go. And she's like, no, we can't leave. So, and then the very next scene, they're walking out together. And Sean just has this look on his face. It's like, God damn it. We gotta bring him along. Even though he's already, like, he's all, you know, like, reverts back to a kid just walking out, like just kind of kicking rocks. He's like, dang it. Okay, fine. So I love that scene, but yeah, the movie's great. It plays on all of the typical zombie tropes without being silly. And I kind of like what James said. It was like, it's like an amazing satire of those movies, but then it's so good that it kind of transcends that and becomes its own kind of genre of zombie movie. Like it set out, they were writing what they were, you know, what they grew up watching. And like, you know, so very, a lot of homages to a lot of other zombie things, but it's so good that it kind of transcends that and becomes its own thing. And now people are like, yo, that movie's a Shaun of the Dead type movie. And so, yeah, it's just rare that that happens. And then we get like two more in the trilogy of movies that have that same kind of thing, where I'm sure we'll talk about them eventually, but when they all kind of transcend that and become their own thing, and it's like, oh, this is a Hot Fuzz type movie, or this is a, you know, World's End type movie now. And it's like, yeah, they're, so I love them all. But
yeah, and I didn't even mention at the beginning, I should have set up that our plan is to do all three of the Cornetto trilogy. I didn't even say that. And I don't know, I they take like every couple months we'll do another one, but you know, we'll get to all three, because I love all
remember
three.
How we said we were going to do them all in one episode, and we were like, wait, this is ridiculous. This is impossible.
I'm already glad we didn't do that. Like,
oh, I don't have 5 hours to record.
Be way too much. World's End is the one I can't wait to revisit, because I only saw it maybe once, maybe twice. I definitely saw it once. I may have seen it twice, but I was a little lukewarm on it, especially compared to Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead. But I think it might play better even like getting older too, and there was a lot of stuff about like your friend group changing and like people,
it's
kind
my,
of like
it's my personal favorite of all three.
I've heard people say that a lot. Like it came out and I feel like it was, you know, undervalued, I guess, or underrated, and now a lot of people will say like it's actually my favorite. And back to Shaun of the Dead, that was weird because it was like one of those movies that when it came out, I don't remember hearing like anything about it. Like it just came out of nowhere. And I feel like it was almost one of those movies like in the era of Donnie Darko and Boondock Saints, like DVDs that got passed around my high school. Because this would have been like probably a like senior year. It might have been out of high school, but it was like around
that's cute.
I know. Sorry, not trying to age anybody, but it was having a DVD. It was already, but like
this fucking guy.
That's why my voice cracks. I'm so young. I'm just a baby. It felt like it was like talked about, like you got to see this movie, and I'd never heard of it. People just putting it in your hand, going, "This is a real like hidden gem. You got to watch this." And then I saw it, and I was like, "Oh, this is great. I haven't seen anything like this." I didn't recognize like anybody at the time. Because I don't like, and now it's because Simon Pegg and Nick Frost hadn't done much that I know outside of England.
Space.
And I hadn't seen Space, or I didn't know what Space was. I knew about Bill Nighy from Underworld, I think was the main thing. I was like, oh, it's the bad guy from Underworld. And I was like, yeah. And he just has a threatening aura, I feel like, which they use well in Shaun of the Dead.
No, sure.
Yeah. It was just like this unknown thing that came out of nowhere and like surprised, which is fun when that happens, where you're like, oh, this thing just appeared out of nowhere. And the funny thing is, I'm not a huge horror comedy guy either, but this one works. And I think that's because Edgar Wright actually really like loves horror movies. Like, not saying people that make horror comedy don't love horror, but I don't think he's trying to shortchange the horror, if that makes sense. Like they work well together. Like somebody, I'm sorry, you guys all talk, so I don't know who said like the way that they mix everything works so well. It was Chris. Okay, yeah. It's like that they mix the horror and the comedy, and there is even like the romance angle, and there's emotional beats. I mean, we'll spoil stuff. Like the stuff with Sean talking to Bill Nighy in the car before he actually turns is actually pretty emotional. And then especially the thing with Sean and his mom in the bar. Gosh. Is actually really a genuinely emotional moment that's not like undercut with a joke or anything. It's just played straight. Like, I guess maybe that's the difference. It's like the horror is played pretty straight. I mean, they have, there's funny bits like when a zombie's stacking, then they beat him up to the tune of Don't Stop Me Now by Queen, which is like incredible. But I just think because Edgar Wright like loves horror. I know that commentary track they think almost everybody listened to with Edgar Wright and I'm totally blanking.
Simon Pegg.
Yeah, Simon Pegg. And Edgar Wright saying like, oh yeah, I use this zombie score from, you know, like Dawn of the Dead. And like, especially in 2004, that was definitely talking about like the band Zombie and Italian zombie movies, and Italian horror was not as in vogue, I think, as it has become. So, you know, just, I don't, it's just, he mixes everything so well, and that makes it kind of its own unique thing that, you know, it's a cut above a lot of other like kind of maybe cheaper, not as good horror comedy type movies, but yeah, I really enjoyed it for a long time. I've watched it a lot. I did not realize like how many times I had seen it till like this, we were watching for this. I was like, I think I've watched this like over a dozen times, which for me is a lot, even over 20 years to rewatch something like, you know, that many times. But it's just like endlessly rewatchable. And I don't probably just because characters are fun. It moves really well. It's really funny. Yeah, I really love this movie. So I figured we're all on the same page. I didn't expect anybody to be like, you know what, guys? I hate Shaun of the Dead. That would have been a shocker. But yeah, I'm trying to think. Andy, were you going to say something? You
had a hand up. Okay. Yeah, real quick. I was going to say, I think the fact is they set out to not make just an outright comedy.
Right.
Is what makes it so great. Like they set out writing a zombie movie, and there's just funny people and funny relationships that play into Winchester. It. So it's not, yeah, thank you. So it's not like funny for the sake of being funny. It's just these people themselves are hilarious people. And we all have met various people similar to this, not exactly like, but you know, so there's various moments. Like I love when he's got the big plan about going where they need to go. And then they get there and somebody looks up and there's zombies everywhere and like, you said nobody's gonna be here, and like, you know, so those moments are funny. And then when they meet the other group, they're all walk past like, hello, 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 hello,
and they're all the same trope.
Yes, you know, I love that. I mean, yep. I love that bit. Everyone's like got a double on the other group. Yeah,
it's brilliant, but it's not played as like super funny. I think it's just because these people themselves are funny, and hilarious things happen when a zombie outbreak, because you never know what would happen. Thank God we don't know what would ever happen. But and I think that's why it stands that test of time, because they didn't set out to just make a pure comedy or make it funny. It's like funny situations happen when shit goes crazy. And stuff goes like crazy, so.
I like when they're on their way to his mom's house and they run over that guy and they're like, hello, hello. And like, he starts to move and they're like, oh, thank God. Dead. But they're like, oh God, it wasn't us that killed him. Okay, we're good. Like, stupid shit like that just goes so fucking far in this movie, dude. And then it's like the subtle touches where, like, or when we're introduced to Sean and he heads to work and he takes that, there is the tracking shot where he leaves his flat, he goes into the liquor store, and then he leaves. On the next day, it has that same shot after the carnage has started, and he's so oblivious that he even slips in the blood. Yeah. Like,
and still does it
now. At the soda case. Oh. And he's like, us as the audience know shit has gone down, but he's just like on his phone or whatever, just totally fucking oblivious. It's so good, dude. And it's small little things like that that I think just make this movie super fucking special.
Yeah. For that, like, it's also just how it sets it up so well, you know, where it's like the first like 20 minutes, you know, there's all these things that make it's not actually zombie, but it feels like zombie. Like even the intro, like everyone's acting like zombies, like, so it seems like there's zombies already. You know, everyone's looking at their phones, like, you know, it's even all that, like, it's so funny. It is crazy. Like, Edgar Wright is got to be one of the best, like, at, like, well, and Simon Pegg, I guess, because they're writers too, and with who are all the screenplay people for all these movies. You know, it's like, what are we gonna talk about, like, jokes per minute ratio, like laughing, like, it's just like constant, you know, like nonstop, like right in that first scene, you know, you're already like, there's so many jokes in the first like 10 minutes, you're already like on board, right? It hooks you in immediately. Like, what do you mean? Mm-hmm. No, what does exacerbate mean? You know, like so, yeah, and then like whenever they're like talking crap about them, and then it pans over and they're there, and then they're talking crap about them and pans over, you know, like, they're talking crap about Ed, and he's talking crap
it's
about
not like
them,
I but don't like David and die guys. Oh, yes. It's not like I don't like you. No, it's fine.
It's like all that stuff is just like, I don't know, it's like I say it all the time. It's like it feels perfect. Like how do they think this, the fact that they think this up and make it work so well too, I guess it's being able to pull it off, and it's just it's so good.
Because there's a lot of people that couldn't pull off the
right
visual flair of what he's doing. I remember I was like, especially because I think I was like going to film school or wanting to go to film school, I was so blown away by that sequence of Simon Pegg like doing the initial walk and then the follow up when they like, yeah, like Chris, shit's hit the fan and he's just out of it. And there's a lot of those jokes, like, yeah, you said about like being a zombie when you're not a zombie, because people in their normal lives doing their jobs are just like, sometimes kind of eyes are glazed over, and like he's kind of already in zombie mode where he's just like doing his normal walk to the store. And I was like, oh, this is so brilliant. Like, I was so blown away by it, and I still love it. I just think it was funny. I was like, oh my God, this guy, Edgar Wright, is a genius. Like, this is so good. Because I hadn't seen any of his stuff before. So all the tricks and stuff were like new. And I still love his style, but at the time it was like, yeah, I never
seen anything like that. Like quick that. Cutting.
Quick cutting. Yeah, all the quick cutting. I'd seen that.
Never gets old to me.
I know, I still love it. We've gotten so much more of that commentary since this about like, oh, we're just zombies in our normal lives because we just go to our jobs and
right. You know, this is 20 years ago. Yeah, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm. And it's like some people might watch us now if they haven't seen it before and like, oh, this is old hat at this point. But like at the time, we weren't as beaten over the head with it. I mean, George Romero did it.
Dawn of Dead. I was gonna say, and then almost like, 20 years before, you know, like he was doing it.
Which Edgar Wright definitely, you know, besides the title rhyming, it's like he clearly says that's an influence on this movie. But it feels, I mean, Dawn of the Walking Dead came out. I feel like all zombie stuff feels like it's just been, you know, oversaturated, I guess is the word, like to death at this point. But yeah, this is still fun just because I think it's got all the, like, the elements. When he's doing the comedy, it's funny. When he's doing, like, when David gets like pulled apart
good
near the end, that's right,
That's kind of what I was thinking earlier whenever you said he does the horror stuff good. And it's not like scary, but it's gory. Like he goes hard into the gore like a zombie movie should. So he's not like shying away from that. Like you said, when he gets pulled apart. Or even like, I mean, sure, it's like super messed up on so many levels when he has to shoot his mom, right? Like just those things like that. It's like, but he's like, you see him blow his mom's brains out. I mean, like, and you get to see that. So it's like, he's giving those freaks that want to see that, yep. But also like, you know, you also get to see the emotional side of him having to deal with, you know, killing his mom.
Yeah.
And those kind of build throughout. Cause when he first sees Pete, his, you know, roommate in the shower, he's like, he doesn't do anything. He just, and then he just closes the door and he leaves him in there. So, and then later Bill Nighy's character and then the mom, it builds on itself. And like, at first they're like just throwing records at the two zombies. And I like when they're going through the whole record collection, he's like, this one, he's like, no way, man, that's a good one. Like, so like, there's still moments of like,
levity the where Batman like, this soundtrack really throw happening. It.
Throw it. But there's moments where that's happening and you're just like, oh, but then it's intercut with like extreme quick violence. Like when Mary falls on that, you know, that yard implement or whatever it is. And you're just like, ooh, and they're all kind of freaked out. And as the movie builds, the characters have to are like accepting it. So you as the audience are following with them and you're like, okay, this is where we're at now. And yeah, so really good. And by the time they're all at the end and all the personal relationships are coming out and like David, you know, like Simon Pegg finally calls him out on liking his girlfriend and his, you know, his girlfriend's right there. And it's all a lot of just eerie, gross.
Oh, you're a twat. Yeah.
But it's really well done. And I like Sean kind of becomes the Sean that he wanted to be because he's thrust into it. But then at the end, like his girlfriend also realizes that, oh, what we had was pretty darn good too. So there's like, it's nice that not everything has to always end with like, everybody changes and grows. Like, no, sometimes you just have to be knocked out of your mundane to realize that your mundane is pretty damn good sometimes. So,
right. Well, that's, yeah. That's kind of like, yeah, that's their growth is realizing that, right. Like that's how they grow. Like,
they're just, yeah, they're super comfortable with each other. They like each other's company and stuff like that. Like my wife will send me something like ungodly amount of like TikToks and stuff like that. And you know, so those type of things, I relate to that. Cause I'm like, yeah, I saw one where somebody said like, you ever doze off next to your, you know, partners because you're so comfortable and so at ease with them. I was like, hey, we do this all the time. And then I tell her I'm not asleep. I'm just resting my eyes. So
classic addressing my eyes. Yeah. It's
classic. It's like, yeah, cool. It works never.
Man, I still
speaking of the roommate, that like I could say that so many scenes are my favorite scene of the movie, but it's true because there are so many. One is it's after everything's happened or started, and they know that the roommate had a bite on his hand and he's upstairs and Simon Pegg is doing that Pete but fucking Nick Frost's oi prick gets me every fucking time I've seen this movie. And then they're like, he's not in. So well done, dude. But it turns out that he is in. And for me and Andy, he's the voice of Darth Maul.
Yeah,
in the movie.
Yep. And he's in John Wick 2 as the sommelier.
Oh yeah, my God, that's right. Right. Wow, I did not.
That's mine. Just went.
And he's in Guardians too. Remember, he's the guy that calls him a bunch of a-holes. He's been in a lot of stuff.
He has. And I did not put. Now you're saying all these things. I can remember him on all these parts, but I did not put it together.
Chris is right, though. Because, like, you know, that's like the thing is like, because I do my favorite part of Shaun of the Dead is the comedy, actually, like, even more than the horror. As much as I love the horror, it's how funny it is. And like, some of my favorite stuff with their roommate, you know, is like whenever he comes home or they come home, you know, and he's like, what does he say? I'm not saying it was you. And he's like, I know, man. I'm saying it was Ed, right? Like those little things, like so fast he says that next thing and he's so serious, you know, like, or the, how long ago was that? You know, that was 5 years ago, you know, like, yeah, just those, like those moments.
And the door's open again.
Exactly. It's like, it's too perfect. But one of my favorite moments, it might be my favorite moment. And it's not even like, if I say it, it won't even, you'll be like, hey, that's fine, whatever. But It's just the way that Nick Frost says, fuck yeah, after the Pete's so pissed about like having to go into work early and they're being loud. And like Nick Frost is like agreeing with him, like, fuck yeah. Just the way he responds to it. Oh, it's,
God. Nick Frost is so pretty good. Great in this as like the big oaf. I don't know. It's like, has everyone had a friend like this? Like maybe less we get older, but like a friend who like just was like the fuck up, hang around, like burnout type of guy who just like.
He reminds me of one of my friends, but not the burnout fuck up side. Okay. But like just even like his just like
I didn't want anyone to name like, anybody. No one name yeah. a friend, but I feel
yeah, like no. All... But he does remind me like the how funny he is and like he's just always going and like stuff like that. But
take away that. Yeah, you'll have that friend that says the things that you're like, what did you just say? Like right. that, oh, and that's yeah, Nick yeah. Frost in this movie, left and right. So yeah.
And the friend that maybe a girlfriend does not care for.
Right.
And then he's also too much. An anal kind of roommate. Luckily, I've really had many of those, but I know they exist. But
homicidal maniac.
And then even it was like the whole Sean Liz relationship. I feel like is handled very well, which is, I mean, really like the through line of the movie. Besides, I mean, I guess you could look at it as is it about Nick Frost and Simon Pegg's friendship, or is it about Sean and Liz? I feel like it's
about all of it.
About all of it, really.
Yeah, it's about all of them.
But growing up and, you know, or just kind of, you know, you got to make, it gets out of, out of your comfort zone. Like Andy said, like, mm-hmm. how, you know, things have to change every once in a while. Like, they don't have to change completely because, like, at the end, he still goes and plays video games with his zombie friend. but now Liz lives there. So, I mean, you know, things change. Yeah. But I think even the commentary, Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg are like, giving kudos to Kate Ashfield who plays Liz. Cause like, it is kind of on paper. I imagine, or even like one of those, like, oh, I'm the, what's the word? Like the not nagging, nagging's the wrong word, but like, there's like the girlfriend or wife who wants the guy to grow up. And it's like, you know, but...
it could have been a character that was very annoying and very shrill.
Yes. Yeah.
But I think how she plays it is she loves Sean and knows that he has flaws and loves him. And despite those flaws, but just wants them to take another step in their relationship. And she feels that his current situation, or whether it be job or Ed or whatever, is kind of holding them back. So it's a mature relationship that even after everything or that happens, he doesn't really advance all that much. Oh, she's okay with it because, and deep down, Sean is a good dude. He's just kind of lazy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like yeah, she sees what Sean's capable of and that he's kind of squandering it. So she wants him to better himself. But then she kind of sees that. She sees that in the kind of guy that would take charge, would call all the zombies to chase after him so they could get to safety. And she sees those things. So that's when she kind of realized like, oh, I kind of was dating the guy all along. It's just, it doesn't always show up because it doesn't need to show up. Yeah, we're not in a crazy situation.
Like the way,
and then when it does, yeah.
Oh, sorry. On the rewatch, I noticed like when he runs off and they all get inside the Winchester and they're like debating like, oh, Sean ran off. He's not coming back. And then when he does come back, there's a quick shot of her giving him a look like, she's almost amazed a little bit, or like in disbelief, like, shit, he did it and he came back. Like, so that's like, I think the beginning of like, oh, they're the different Sean in there, or different side of him that she didn't know.
Because he takes charge.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Dude, he changes. He takes charge. He leads them, not to safety because they all die except for Sean and Liz. But, but along
it's
the way,
that counts.
Yeah,
see, but along the way, it's not his fault that they died. It's not like he fucked up somewhere. His mom is totally gone and fucking loopy and goes into the house because, oh, I thought it was this neighbor's house.
Yeah.
Like the roommates, oh, they die because of David being like, I can't stay here anymore. I have to leave because he almost shoots Sean or whatever, you know, they tell him like, that's really fucking stupid. Just staying here. And he's like, nope. He opens up the window. He gets fucking shredded. So it's not anyone else's fault other than their own that they die. It's Ed kind of, because
Ed's not dead.
You know what I mean, though, right?
Like, I know.
Like, if Sean would have smashed in the head of Pete at the start of, you know, the whole outbreak, Ed, he might have been okay. He might not. But at the same time, I don't think that we would have had the Sean who we had at the end of the movie if Ed had lived as a human rather than a zombie.
Agreed.
Yeah, I was going to say, too, like, you know, you're saying, as Liz, you know, doesn't come off as nagging or anything. Part of that is also because how good Simon Pegg plays Sean, and we do get to see that he's deserving of most of, like, her criticisms, mm-hmm. right? So it's like, I would never see her as nagging, because she's just wants him to do just a little bit more, you know, like, you know, mm-hmm. pick up a little bit, and, you know, like you said, he does finally, little by little, toward the, you know, as it goes on, and she's seeing it, you know, like, as it goes. But yeah, if he wasn't playing that so well, obviously, too, she could have come off more nagging and whatnot, but he's making it clear that he is worthy of those nags, you know. So
yeah, she makes it way more than a one note type of character, which I think even Edgar Wright, the comic, almost sound like he was almost worried that he had wrote it that way, if I remember mm-hmm. right, or he was like worried to come off that way, but he's like, she's so good that it doesn't come off that way,
right? No, it doesn't at all.
Just a couple of funny things. You guys are like, phone, which you find really funny. Two things that stick out to me. When Diane teaches him how to act like zombies before they go out in the crowd, and then she looks at Sean's mom. I was just about to mention this. Yeah. She's like, you're doing great. She's like, oh, I was just.
Oh, I'm sorry, dude. I was miles away.
Yeah, I was miles away. Like, and then, God, and then
that quick look back to everybody. She was like,
that classic bit that comes back in Hot Fuzz with the fences. He's like, turns around. He's like, what's the matter, David? Never heard of a shortcut? And immediately falls off. Like, a great gag.
But then, dude, a few minutes later, when he takes the little dude, like the kid ladder, and fucking sets it down and does that tick, tick, tick step
every
thing,
single
and
step,
and then comes back down, they're like,
is it clear?
No.
Yeah, it's perfect.
How many are there? Lots. But it's just the timing of the walking up the steps and walking down all the way, like hitting every step. Again, on paper, that joke isn't funny, mm-hmm. but how they play it and how they shoot it, it's fucking hilarious.
Yep.
So many of the jokes are.
That's like the one where Ed stares out, goes to the window, and it, you know, he says, are they still out there? And then so he turns around. You know, stares out the window. There they are. You know, it's like the so prolonged, like, until you get this reaction that, yeah, they are.
Yeah, I absolutely adore when they're leaving the bar after drinking too long, and, you know, being Sean once again, the Sean that falls short. And as they're leaving, they're both kind of singing the song, and the zombies goes. It's just like these two guys are like the best of friends, and they see the person, like the couple that appears to be making out, but then you literally see the head just kind of flop out of nowhere. Oh, yeah. You're like, whoa, something's going on here. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's just, I mean, it's little visual flair like that that's hilarious, as well as the great gags of walking up, and then when they kill the first zombies with the shovel and the bat. I love when they both square off and then they look at each other and they're like, wait a minute. And they both switch to take on the mm-hmm. Sean takes the smaller person. He takes the bigger one. It's hilarious. And then they just keep going. And the humor is not in the fact that they're killing a zombie. It's how long it goes on that it just keeps going and going and going. And just like, okay, this is funny now. And it's not meant. It's just, it's like a serious thing because they're killing somebody, but it's like, okay, this is how we get past them killing people. After that, it's hilarious. So yeah, it works.
I mean, yeah, go ahead, James. Oh,
I was just going to say, there's gotta be a name for that comic. Cause I was going to say too, I got a couple more, but they're that same style. Like toward the end, whenever it turns on the lights, sees the zombies, then turns them off. It's like, what is that? That's like, because that's the thing that they keep doing, where it's like those prolonged like things.
It's Edgar Wright.
Like, this hits this, and then you see, and like, what is that? Like, that's gotta be, like, there's gotta be a name for that comedy bit. because they do it over and over. It's so good. Like those are my favorite moments. Is it clear? No. Like, you know, like all those little beat, you know, it's, I don't know, man.
I know there's so much stuff that like shouldn't or wouldn't work in other movies, but the way they execute it, it makes it funny. And like, it's the timing of it. Edgar Wright's so good at timing things. Like clearly, like from the way he does it, musical cues, like I think like Baby Driver, how things are timed out and that to songs. Mm-hmm. Like he's clearly very good at that. And whoever the editor is, I should probably give credit to you because a lot of great editing, but it's just always so like perfectly timed out and for, you know, best impact basically. And like, Stuff and Shaun of the Dead, like I think would not be funny if it was not delivered or timed out in the same way, but it's hilarious when it's in this movie. So it's it's good touch. And I feel like correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm trying to think of people who've tried to take Edgar Wright's style and I'm kind of blanking on anybody trying to ape that.
I think people would be dumb to try to ape it because he's like perfected. It's very unique.
It's very specific. I just was thinking like, that's interesting. No one's probably even tried. They're like, that seems too hard. I'm not going to do that.
I don't want to be the guy that rips off. Yeah. I don't want to be the guy that's known for ripping off Edgar Wright.
Well, that's true. I was just thinking if everyone like ripped off Tarantino in the 90s, I thought, you know, it's like, they'd be like, I'll try the Edgar Wright style and be like, oh, this is actually really hard to time things out. And, you know,
I think because it's so visual and so unique, it's different. Whereas like Tarantino, they're trying to ape his like dialogue or the way that he sets up certain things. Whereas this is so unique. And so, and I mean, think about it. They made Spaced before this. And then this comes out of the gate, establishing that Edgar Wright visual flair that goes through the whole trilogy moving onwards. And it only gets better as he gets on, as he goes on. So it's just, and then he puts it in other movies too. So it's just, the guy's a once in a lifetime kind of talent too. Like he's just, I mean, the writer director that can do almost anything. I mean, horror, and action,
he also works a lot with the same actors and actresses over and over and over again. Like I called out, the mom from Spaced is in his ex's group. Well, his ex is the lead in Spaced with Simon Pegg, or and Martin Freeman has a cameo in this, but he's got a larger role in Hot Fuzz and a lead role in At World's End, or like, I'm going to slaughter how to say his name, and Rafe Spall, R-A-F-E, in Shaun of the Dead, he's Noel. He's the kid who works with Sean.
Yeah.
At the appliance store, he's one of the Andes in Hot Fuzz.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Is all these actors they always tend to just show up over and over and over again. So it's obvious that Edgar Wright, he knows who to cast and when, because they all come back. You know what I mean?
Right. Mm-hmm. Andy's good at being a dick to Simon Pegg and the like passive aggressively. Just God, what a sting when someone who's really young's like, oh, you're old. It's like, I'm only 29. It's like, kind of old. You know, it's like, oh God, like it's not that old.
You got ink on your shirt, or no, red on your shirt.
You got red on you, which people say a few times.
I didn't catch it for some reason. I don't know why, until this last watch. But when Noel receives a phone call at work, if you listen to it or have the subtitles on, it's fucking Ed calling him to see if he has any weed, which I never caught before.
I had the subtitles on and I still missed that. So that's actually,
hello, mate. Nah, man, I'm totally, you know, so good, dude.
I don't have any other notes on it. I mean, I'm not saying we have to wrap up, but who else has anything they want to say about Shaun of the Dead? We're all like, yeah, great movie, really funny.
I was just going to say, yeah, I know. I didn't realize that was Timothy Spall's son until I watched that commentary this time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Noel or whatever, Rafe Spall.
Yeah, the only other thing I'd add is that Edgar Wright also has the most unique ability to needle drop at the right time and the right song. Like, it's one of those things we've had other people, and like, you know, our good friend Mike Scott was like, you know, because I just rewatched Ryan Reynolds Netflix movie, the Adam Project, and Sean Levy, he's like, he needle drops at the right time, but he picks the wrong song necessarily. Mm. It's like, it seems a little too old for this, or, or for this audience or whatnot. Edgar Wright's just seem absolutely perfect in every movie where there's a needle drop or where there's musical cue or hit. It's it thematically fits. You immediately start just kind of going, bopping your head to it. You're like, yeah, this is awesome. And it just, it works every single movie. Even, you know, when he has music that's made up for the movie, Scott Pilgrim, like there's songs that they play that just fit perfectly with what's going on.
They just work. Yeah.
They just work.
It's kind of funny too, because I feel like maybe it's because of how good, and everyone associates him with his like quick editing style, like that precise, that his music, they it gets a little overlooked, like how good he is as a needle driver too. Like, it's like no one even remembers to bring him up in those conversations.
Yeah, right. That's that's true. Yeah, and it's funny too, because I know one of the songs in the commentary said, oh, it's when they're in the bar, basically after Liz is like kind of broken up with him or had the fight, you know, and like, and comes on the jukebox, and it's like that song, If You Leave Me Now. She probably wanted some other song, but I think If You Leave Me Now is funny. And then Edgar Wright was like, yeah, we couldn't clear their song, but we cleared this, and I think it works better. Oh, also a funny moment too, when he's like, who put that on? It's like, it's on random. Like, crying. Like,
on that, random. It's also funny when he says, like, see, you're already over.
Like, Nick Frost, not the friend to help you at all if you're feeling emotional.
You
get over.
Like, and he goes, do you want the Clyde impression? Do you want the Clyde impression? And just,
oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's funny. Good.
Or when they come up with the plan to go to the Winchester, and they slowly start to change it as it goes along.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That whole montage is great. We run the plan down. It's like, have a pint, wait for the whole thing to blow over. Oh,
wait for this whole thing to blow over.
When they carry them out, they're all smiling as they carry them out, like people.
Oh my God. They're like crossing paths with each other because it's like a musical number. It's so wonderful. He's like, yep.
Yeah. he needs to make a full on musical, I think. And that's speaking of me, that's funny too, because like, maybe that's why, you know, I don't know. I like to just throw things out, obviously, but like, he gets overlooked in that regard because so many of his movies are so focused on music almost that it's like you don't even like even Last Night at Soho, that's very music. Like, she's like super into records and stuff,
right?
You know, like,
right.
Baby Driver, he's like all about the music while he's, you know, doing everything his whole life. Like, that it's all. So maybe it's just because he is so connected to music that it's like not fair. Like, you're cheating.
You know? Yeah, you're cheating. But, do we know? Do we talk about this in Scott Pilgrim? Do we know what he's working on next, Edgar Wright?
I could look it up.
Yeah, we did talk about it.
I don't think we did. And I don't. It's one of those things I don't actually have to look up what they're looking at. And I should like kind of keep an eye on what my favorite like creators are doing. But I tend to do it with more with like comic books than I do. This, like, I could tell you who's writing what, but and the fact that we don't know who's gonna write Nightwing after Tom Taylor leaves, it's driving me absolutely fucking insane because I don't know, and I need to brace myself for whoever's writing next.
So, according to IMDb, he is in development as a director of and The Running Man.
Saw that. Like,
a Running Man remake?
Yeah,
but I don't know. And then The Chain is in pre-production. It looks like it's a thriller about a woman finds herself trapped in a terrifying kidnapping chain. It is a mystery thriller. And then he's got like six other things in
development.
Yeah, I feel like you can never trust that.
Including a Baby Driver 2, which didn't we say all we had to say with the first Baby Driver?
We said about the actor, yeah.
Quite a few of the actors have been
outside of the ick factor.
Like,
I still think that is a great movie outside of the ick factor, but it doesn't need a sequel.
No. Right,
unless he's focusing on a different character off, or something like, else. Yeah, maybe
into the sunset. Basically, only. It's like we wrapped it up. Like,
yeah,
I guess
going back to what Yeah, going back to what he's working on, though, if he is doing a actual Running Man, like full-blown remake that he has a lot of control over, I think that could be very interesting, because he's shown he can do action. He's shown he can do satire, quote unquote, you know, with that, because that's all the Running Man is. But the Running Man was also at a time in like the 80s when like game shows were so prevalent. Now, I mean, unless you're watching the Game Show Network, which, sorry, I do not like game shows. Ugh, don't like them. Never did.
I love
my brother. My brother and sister would watch them all day long. I would be like, come on, Dukes of Hazzard, A-Team is on. Why are we watching The Price is Right again?
Oh,
so, according to IMDb, it is a remake of the Arnold Schwarzenegger 87.
Oh,
all right.
Okay.
You know what? In Edgar Wright, I trust, and I'll leave it at that.
Isn't the Running Man...
He has yet to steer me wrong.
Isn't the Running Man book, isn't the main guy in the book not Arnold-like at all?
No.
Completely opposite of that, yes.
Okay. Because no. I was like, who's going to play the...
Arnold-like.
Oh, I know, that's true, but who's going to play the Arnold part?
Plain Zero!
I mean, Alan Ritson, right?
Oh, well, that's true. Yeah.
Any remakes with Arnold, it's got to be him.
It's got to be Reacher.
Reacher only.
He's like, apparently multi-talented, because I saw a clip going around him like American Idol.
The dude can sing. He can play the guitar. He's
he's done comedy. I mean,
talk to angels.
That movie,
I saw that trailer and I was like, "Ordinary this be one Reacher movie I'm skipping."
Well, everybody's the actors got to work, you know, they got to make that money.
Hey, they got to get paid.
Ernie Hudson was just talking about, speaking of Ghostbusters earlier, he was like, he's been a working actor this whole time because, you know, he's not rich by any means. He got to keep working because, you know, most.
How the hell is he 80, by the way? That dude looked good.
I actually said that when you were gone. I saw somebody post a picture. I'm like, 78 years old? I'd like to look that good at 44.
Watching Ghostbusters 2.
Chris was gone.
Oh, yeah. Chris did disappear for a minute. But
he stood up for a minute. Yeah.
I was watching Ghostbusters 2 and I was like, Ernie Hudson now looks like he's barely 5 years older than Ernie Hudson in Ghostbusters 2.
Like, he looks younger now than he did in The Crow.
Yes. Yeah.
My God.
And Bill Murray looks at the very 100 years older than he did in Ghostbusters 2.
Ernie Hudson has not got the same like talk. People are like, oh, Paul Rudd doesn't age and Tom Cruise. And like, you know,
Ernie Hudson doesn't age.
That guy really doesn't age. Like, it's crazy. I don't know what else to say about Shaun of the Dead. I don't know what else to say. It just, we all love it.
To quote a Twitter hero, good movie.
Good movie.
Good movie. I love it.
I mean, it's a great movie. It's a five-star banger for me, man. Oh, I don't know.
Five, okay. All right.
Same. It's one of those movies that,
all right.
that I could throw on at any time. Like, I don't save it for like October or anything like that.
Yeah,
like a special occasion, I can just put on whenever.
Yeah, and I actually feel that way about all of the trilogy. Actually, prior to us planning the series, I've been itching to do a rewatch of the trilogy because last October I watched Shaun of the Dead. And then I threw it out to you guys and I was like, hey, how about we do the trilogy? And then we had to hold off. And I'm like, this whole time just been like, I want to do a rewatch of Hot Fuzz and World's End after Shaun of the Dead. And now I'm like, well, see, I have to watch it, you know, like for the podcast. So I'm like, I'll just wait. I'll hold off on it. But
I didn't. I rewatched
any
Hot
of
Fuzz
these
recently.
Three. In particular, Shaun of the Dead, though, I just think for it to be his first movie, like he had done a commercial and some shorts and TV in Britain, for him to come out with this and not lose his style in any way, so fucking special. And it's just, dude, it's one of those movies that I quote all the fucking time, dude. Like, motherfucker is one that I use. Religiously, for no reason whatsoever, when he's talking about his mom, he goes, "She like butter." I do that one too. It's like, kind of, it's just so many quotable lines, and I like even the characters who you are meant to hate, you still kind of like. I like David because he's played so well at being a fucking whiny douche that I'm like, yeah. I can't help but like him because I'm like, I like what the actor has taken off the script and made it his own. Like, I wouldn't change any cast member in this movie at all. Everybody's perfect. I wouldn't change a scene out of this movie. I think from a script perspective and an editing perspective, a runtime, it's just all so dialed in. I fucking love this movie.
Yeah. It's ditto. It's great. It is crazy. It's his debut movie. Like, it's his feature debut. Like, it's so confident for someone's first full length movie. It's very great. I'm excited to talk about the rest of them too. Cause I mean, I love Hot Fuzz and I'm very excited to revisit World's End. So we will get to those.
That's making me think of, like, you know, people always talk about like best, you know, first movies, sophomore movies. Like, I mean, to think that these are his, you know, first two movies, like.
Oh, and then yeah. Wow. Oh, the sophomore slump, dude. You always hear about that. You know, the sophomore slump. Yeah. He didn't have one for damn sure.
I mean, I do think you really see him getting better and growing as a filmmaker as it goes along. He starts off really good and then it gets even better. So it's very impressive. I'm excited to talk about the other two at some point. So
that's what makes it tough too about, you know, like picking, like, because like I think I might. Shaun of the Dead might overall be funnier to me than Hot Fuzz or, you know, World's End Order, right? But Hot Fuzz is better at some other things than Shaun of the Dead. And, you know, like, they each are better at something else. So where I, like, you know, it's hard to pick your favorite because you're liking them all I think Shaun of the Dead is the one that makes me laugh the most nonstop. Hot Fuzz is close, but, you know, it's got a little more of that, just that an action spoof, you know, / mystery thriller stuff
going and then I think out of all three, At World's End has the strongest Nick Frost performance and
I
think it's the deepest
and Simon Pegg performance Simon Pegg in that movie, I was like blown away by. I was like, wow, like he has the level of emotion in Shaun of the Dead. But in At World's End, he's just up here. Mm-hmm. Like, all those years as an actor have just helped him develop. And now he's in one of the hugest action franchises of all time.
I know, right?
I love him in the Mission Impossible movies. He's like my favorite part. My sister, I know, her favorite part. She's like, he's the funniest part. Like, she was so worried for him in the last one. She was like, they better not kill him.
He's that character in those movies everybody wants that you need because he brings that levity. I mean, let's be honest, in Rogue Nation when he's running through the building, he's go through the window, and he's like, it's just those bits are so perfectly timed, and Simon Pegg is great. And then you think about it, the guy also co-wrote this. He's gone on to help write the, you know, J.J. Abrams Star Trek verse thing when they came into some issues. So like he always seems to be he's there when he needs to be and where he needs to be, and he never like overextends his welcome, it seems like, you know what I mean? Like, nobody gets sick of Simon Pegg. People aren't like, oh, he's in another Mission Impossible. No, people are like, yes, he's in Mission Impossible. Like, you want him to be in there. He's used perfectly. And I guess it's when you're good and when you're a great actor, you know, and you pick really good projects, that's what happens.
Also, if you follow either him, Edgar Wright, or Nick Frost on Instagram, it was like a week or two ago, they posted and they were all out to dinner with each other. And I'm just like, yes.
Yeah.
I'm still buds.
Make a new movie, please. We want more.
What other really good movie Simon Pegg's in?
What's that?
Ready Player One.
I forgot he was in that. Completely forgot he was in that movie.
That's right, buddy.
Any chance to push your Ready Player One agenda, you'll just...
After seeing what happened to James, I will never tweet about that movie because I get enough shit for when I tweet about Star Wars movies.
It didn't happen to anybody, but it would happen to you.
Right? It would, because Andy can tweet about...
Remember? I actually did. Alaska. I said, hey, Ready Player One's really great. And everybody jumps on like, yeah, it is, man. Yeah. I'm like, I'm Teflon.
They just let Andy get away with everything.
Andy can tweet.
Everybody's secretly scared of me, man. That's all.
On Star Wars and doesn't get any shit. I tweet about Star Wars and oh, my mentions are a fucking trash fire.
And garbage. That was like one of the only times I remember James getting a lot of hate on something was the Ready Player One thing.
One of the only times, yeah.
Usually it's pretty friendly. I mean,
that's pretty much the only time that it's been like wow. That. Like, okay. Like Chris level, you know, like.
You're a Twitter hero, man. Stuff yeah, happens. No,
that's a one-time thing.
That's wild. The only thing I'll say is if people have not listened to the Edgar Wright Simon Pegg commentary for Shaun of the Dead, they should, because it's a really good and like fun commentary. I don't listen to many commentaries at all anymore. Insightful, and I was listening to that one. I was like, I should do this more often for movies I like. I've already seen them a bunch.
Well, and especially like comedies, I feel like too, or not necessarily comedy, but like if the people are being funny on top, like
right.
That, like it's like in and of itself, it's a whole new thing. Like
it is up there with the strongest of like any commentary that I've ever listened to. I don't listen to a lot of commentaries, but I listen to Shaun of the Dead, and to me, it had like the same vibe. And oh, stick with me, Affleck, when he did the commentary of Armageddon, where he's just talking shit on the movie like the entire time until Michael Bay finally goes, Ben, shut the fuck up. Like, it's on Shaun of the Dead, it has that same vibe of just it's two friends just hanging out and talking about all their influences and how they made the movie. And it's
And they're super proud of what they did because they have every right to be, and it's great. I will throw out my absolute favorite commentary. I'm a big commentary guy. If there's one, if it's on a disc, I'll watch it. But the Arnold Schwarzenegger and John Milius commentary for Conan the Barbarian is one of the absolute best. Like at one point after Arnold's maybe third or fourth sex scene, he just turns to John Milius and goes, wow, I was getting laid a lot in this movie. it's just ridiculous from the very start. It's really great.
Arnold commentaries are fantastic. Someone just posted, and I've seen this many times, the Total Recall Schwarzenegger Verhoeven commentary, where Schwarzenegger's just like saying what's happening in front of him. He's like, okay, then I grab the guy, then I break his neck, and then he dies. And then he's like, see, and here I'm looking past her, but I know what's going to. He's just telling you what's happening.
I know. He's like telling you all the little like script notes that are in the side. He's like, you remember when I was looking past her, but I see the like sweat bead on the guy's head, so I shot him in the face. It's literally that's all it is, and it's wonderful.
He's a treasure.
He really is. It's and he said it was like it's pure joy. It's like can't be mad at him because he sounds so happy watching the movie. Like it's so good. I gotta watch that one again.
And
so
you gotta watch Conan one. That's worth watching.
Oh, I do. Yeah. Any Arnold commentary, I'll be there. Okay. Well, I guess we can wrap up because we've all agreed Shaun of the Dead is great, and we'll do Hot Fuzz and World's End soon. Eventually, I don't know when to promise those, but maybe every 2 months we'll spread it out a little bit and do.
Sure.
It's only two more, so you don't take that long. So
you know what
talk about
it afterwards.
I don't know how the logistics of that would work with when you're in Texas and we do it in the same room.
Oh,
that could be cool.
Maybe I didn't. Oh, I was thinking about.
We could push out the third one when
I'm. You know
what's
funny? I had thought about possibly podcasting people in person, but then I didn't want to seem like a douche who was like, "I'm only here for podcasting content. You know, you better podcast me while I'm here."
Hello, friend. I came to visit you
to podcast, not to spend time with you outside.
Then I thought about lugging like my podcasting, like the laptop and microphone and cover around and all the other stuff
getting on
the airplane. We could talk about it. Maybe it's possibility, James. But I guess I should announce this because it'll make me actually do something about it. I'm planning on launching Patreon page for the podcast in April. So I hope I put a poll out a long time ago.
Soundboard.
Yes. I put a poll out a long time ago on Twitter trying to gauge this, and it was overwhelmingly positive. Because I was like, should I do this? Should I not do this? People were like, yeah, go for it. So it's gonna be one tier. I keep it pretty cheap. So nothing crazy. just trying to cover Zoom cost and podcasting hosting costs, things like that, it's not going to be, you know, crazy. So, but
shit adds up.
it does. Yeah. It does. So especially you're paying it once a month. So, but yeah, I just figured, I was like, I think we have a strong enough listenership that I'll give it a shot. And if it doesn't work out, I'll just quietly take it behind the barn and kill it again. So I'll just feel like that didn't work out. I feel weird
with the flowers
asking anybody for money for anything, but I'm going to try to make it worth everybody's while with a episode once a month and other stuff on the Patreon, like polls and things like that. I'm not sure quite yet, but it's been in the works for a while, but I have to like actually say it to make me actually do it. So it should be out in April. The first episode of the Patreon should be on the Abyss with all the guys here, Chris, Andy, and James. So I think it'd be pretty exciting. So yeah, I just figured I'd announce that now to get, you know, to light the fire to myself. So it's exciting. So yeah, that's coming up, and I will let you guys plug whatever you want to plug. So Andy, why don't you go ahead and start?
No, okay. If you want to follow me, just look for the big lovable nerd with surrounded by droids when you search Andrew M. Gorham. Again, nothing but positivity there. You won't find me shitting on anything, unless it's really bad. But even then, I don't. And yeah, I'll let Chris do the real pimping of what we're gonna be talking about soon.
Oh, me. Sorry. you can follow me at GingerDome81 on basically everything. But Andy and I have our own Star Wars podcast, which we're hopefully sitting down to record episode 6 in like a week or two, which is crazy that we're already through 5 episodes. It's going well. Everybody seems to like it. Dude, we got a lot of awesome feedback. So if you want to listen to the show, Imperial Scum on any podcast server, with the exception of Apple, because Apple still for 6 months is not allowing my artwork to publish. So that's the only thing holding up the show, and I don't have the patience to deal with it.
Hey Matt, jump on that for us.
It's a pain in the ass. I don't remember how I fixed it. It's been so long. If you Google it, people are like, it's got to be this many like pixels or something insane. Like
it's,
it can't be
so annoying.
It's so specific.
But outside of that, dude, the show is going extremely well. A look up at Scum Imperial on any social media. It's me, Andy, and Mark just talking Star Wars, and me trying to steer this ship that Andy and Mark are like two little kids on each side of the boat, especially in the last one. Who's ever listened to our last episode when we talk about the preview of novels in 2024, I break. Like I broke and could not continue for at least like a minute. And Andy had to take over because I was in pain in my jaw because I was laughing so hard.
Mark was on fire last episode. We'll just leave it at that.
It was two children just going in each of my ears, just making inappropriate sex jokes in relation to Star Wars. And Andy's acting like he's innocent. He wasn't. He wasn't. He made a lightsaber joke, a double-sided lightsaber joke.
Listen and find out.
Oh, boy.
Inappropriate. Wow.
Like you're like the dad driving the car saying, keep a dad back there.
I am every single episode.
That's what he felt like.
Every episode, dude.
Oh, I love it. but yes, everyone should be listening to Imperial Scum. I'm sorry you're not on Apple yet. That is a pain in the ass. If you Google that about the artwork thing, I had to find the solution. It is so specific to how you have to fix it. I cannot remember, but it's it holds a lot of people up on Apple. It's why I don't want to change my artwork. I'm like, I can never probably fix it again to get back on Apple. So, it's yeah, hopefully get that resolved, but it's everywhere else, right? So that's, you know, that's a lot of other options. So
yeah.
James, what do you want to plug?
Nothing. I got nothing. Film Feast.
I'll be here.
that's hanging around on Twitter still. I don't know why, but I do. My friends, y'all, you know, mostly y'all.
Lots of good people on there still.
Yeah.
So
just to, you know, have fun.
All right. Well, I guess, yeah, for our stuff, more to come on that Patreon page. I just wanted to announce that it should be coming in April. I don't have the specifics in front of me, but it's happening. And for now, you can follow the podcast on Twitter at Film Feast Pod. Follow me on Twitter at Maplet87. Follow me and the podcast on Instagram, Film Feast, all one word. And we'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.